is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
It seems like the heat, the warmer conditions this year, the drought that we're in, having a lot of impacts. We're going to talk to Steve Rehnquist from the Oregon State University Extension Service about the impacts of this year's weather and what we have been facing for really longer than a year on your garden, your crops, on your property, things like that. Steve, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, you're welcome. I always enjoy it.
So let's talk about that for people that are gardening this time of year. Well, for instance, I've had just enough trouble keeping my lawn green, and I'm not, you know, growing tomatoes or anything like that because I can't, apparently. I've never been successful. But talk about the impacts you're seeing from folks.
Yeah, well, a number of things are happening. You might imagine that when we start getting these kinds of temperatures over and over and over again, the plants just start recovering from one of these hot cycles, and then they get hammered again. And the worst part is that we entered the season so early in the last half of March, it just stopped raining, as we all know, and that is so unusual. That normally we have a nice recharged soil going into summer in June, and this year we were absolutely parched already. So it's a real challenge to try to figure out, you know, how much to water and what type of plant needs the water the most. And so I always kind of encourage people to think about in their landscape to have your landscape kind of planned so you've got zones where you've got the higher moisture requirement and zones where there's lower moisture requirement plants. And those areas that are lower, like this time of the year, I've got about an acre and a half yard, and those zones that are lower, I just let them dry out. Unfortunately, a lot of those plants get a little sunburn, that sort of thing, but you really have to, because it's just impossible to try to keep everything watered. You'll end up with a $400 water bill, you know, from our local suppliers, and that's kind of unsustainable too. So really the main thing you want to focus on is having an area where you're growing some food. If you have a small area where you're growing some really nice flowers, those are the areas that are going to get the majority of the water. And you have to focus on that. Then, well, how much do I water? Well, in most cases, people say, I don't know how to measure the water. So I'm going to put out my sprinkler and I'm going to run it for 10 minutes. Well, typically, unless you've got a huge faucet there that really opens up, 10 minutes isn't going to get you much of a soak when you're watering. And so I really encourage people to have a probe of some sort that you can push into the ground where you've been watering. And you can feel when you push that probe into it, just a pointed metal rod of some sort or a really long screwdriver, just push that into the ground after you've been watering and see how far it goes in easily. You know, and then when you hit that hard spot, you pull it back out. You can pretty well tell if a lawn, you should be watering to about 4 inches. If you've got vegetable plants, you should be watering a foot deep, you know, 8 inches to a foot easily. If you've got fruit trees, things like that, or nice ornamental trees like Japanese maples, you should be going several feet in the ground. So what that means is you water longer and heavier with your trees, of course, you know, get that deep soak. And then, you know, intermediate for different types of things, shrubs a little less and so on. Yeah, it's really something that you'll learn over time, but just a few simple tools like those screwdriver I was talking about or a soil probe, anything that will really kind of help you focus on how deep am I watering? Because if you just keep watering 10 minutes maybe every other day or 10 minutes a day, you don't have a clue, really. Everybody's soil's a little different. So you really need to dig into it a little.
I have never heard the idea before, and I like it, though, of if you have a sprinkler system, of looking at your zones, because most people, I imagine, do what I do, I have four zones. It's just a regular, typical by a 70 by 100 lot in town. But I've got four zones, and they all go the same. Now, in the case of my yard, that would make sense because I just have grass, and it catches all the plants. But especially if you've got a lot of property and you want to keep some of it nice and green, but you don't want to, you know, pay through the roof or whatever. And even some areas right now, Sutherland, I think there's one community in South County starting to get into even some restrictions about what's allowed just because of where we're at.
Yeah. No, I think a lot of people that have water rights along the Umpqua have been asked to shut down. We're at that point. We're at the point right now we normally would be in late September as far as river level watering. And so one of the things that everybody needs to understand, too, with lawns is at this time of the year, if you water half of what you're watering typically, let's say you normally water once a week or twice a week, and if you cut each of those in half and you go to maybe just twice a month instead of once a week, what'll happen is the grass will brown out on the surface, but when you dig your hands in there and pull it apart, you'll see it's still green right down near the base of the plant before the soil. And you can allow lawns to dry out. And frankly, if they dry out this time of the year, it's not all bad. They get drying out a little bit, they don't tend to get quite as many diseases. And then when the rains return in the fall, you know, they'll green up, they'll come back, and especially if you had a pretty healthy lawn. If you've got a lawn that you've been just giving a tiny bit of water, like that 10-minute, you know, every day, and then you go to cut off, it doesn't have much of a root system. So it's going to be a little more vulnerable to getting hurt.
And what about the aspect or the question that comes up about what time of the day is most effective to water?
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that I often hear, the sprinkler systems coming on, you know, overnight or real late in the evening around where I live. And it makes sense to people like, oh, I'm not going to get the wind or the evaporation. But for the actual health of the plant, if you're watering at night, or in the late evening, and then the lawn goes all night with a wet surface, you tend to get a little more disease. You'll get more fungal disease, especially in August and September. So one of the things that I kind of encourage people to do, water in the early morning if you can. Set your timer or get out and turn your sprinklers on. Water in that 6 to 8 in the morning range, and that's great because the surface will dry out, but at the same time, the water, you're still doing that watering, and it's timely. It'll really help the lawn.
I imagine some people, though, don't pick 6 to 8 because that's when everybody's in taking showers.
Yeah, could be. And the other problem is, of course, people are hustling to go to work, you know, and eating breakfast and so on. But in general, if there's somebody around that can water for their 20 minutes or 30 minutes while you're getting, you know, run out in the yard, you set the sprinkler and or turn them on, and then go do your preparation before you go to work and turn it off when you get ready.
So if people that maybe do early morning, like 2 or 3 in the morning, you've talked about the issue there. What's the earliest? I mean, can you back it up to 5 o'clock and be okay?
In the morning, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Now, if you are within an hour or two of when the sun's popping up, you know, that isn't so long where the surface of the plant is going to stay wet and troublesome. It's just when you do the 10-hour kind of thing.
Steve Rehnquist from the Oregon State University Extension Service. Let's stop here. Come back with more. The interview podcast after 1 at 541radio.com. 1245 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1247. Lars Larson coming at 1. No Umpqua Valley live today. We'll have the Michael Harrison wrap. Look at the big topics and News Talk Radio in the news this week. That'll be at 4 o'clock. Next week, while I'm gone on Inside Douglas County, it's going to be Encore Week. We've gone back through the last few months and found some particularly interesting interviews for you. Those will be playing next week. Steve Rehnquist from the Oregon State University Extension Service in now, talking about the heat, its impact on agriculture, and talk about heat stress on plants.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that most people don't even think about is that there's a level where the temperature starts getting above 90. Plants are just as vulnerable as we are. You know, we start sweating and perspiring. Well, we're perspiring and they're transpiring. And we both are under stress when you get over that 90 range. And when you get this heat, one of the things that's really obvious is with people you see them sweat, with plants you tend to see them wilt. And if you're out there and you've watered and your plant is wilting, you know, that's really not that radical. Just to make sure that the ground is moist, and there isn't a whole lot you can do if the plant is wilting a little bit if the ground is moist. But if you don't think you've been watering enough, you know, that's a pretty good sign. You could test the soil again and put a little extra moisture on there. But wilt is one of those things that if you allow your plant to wilt and the soil is getting dried out, those tissues, the cells, will burst in the plant, and that's why you get the browning off of leaves and all that. Can plants recover from that? Sure, they can recover, but in general, they're not going to be very efficient at growing after that. So really, the idea is when you start seeing wilt, take it pretty seriously. Go out and look. And you know what? There was one interesting thing that I've done this year, and it has really helped, is I got some of the white, kind of pretty thin shade cloth. And then I get these stakes that are about 6 feet high, the little metal stakes that you can get from one of the shops around here, the garden shops. And I put these things in, and I just take some of that green stretchy tape that you often use to tie up things in your garden. And I fasten that white cloth onto those stakes, and I have that stuff suspended about 5-6 feet above the ground. Those white tarps are about 20 feet long, about 4 feet wide, and they're really light cloth, and it's wonderful. It shades the garden, and I've been able to put that over, and I know I've cut my watering in that garden by half, and I get much higher quality vegetables. Not only you can grow lettuce and things that normally in the heat you wouldn't do very well with, but also my tomatoes have never been better. I don't have any sunburn. Plants are just growing like crazy. I can even keep cool season crops, kind of like broccoli, growing in the summertime if I use that shade cloth. So that's an idea for you in your garden if you're really suffering from a lot of this excessive heat. And your garden is to get out there and use those shade cloth. That's great stuff.
I know that you work with the wine community a lot, and we hear about this term heat units. Maybe explain what they are and how that relates to our situation this year with the growing of grapes for wine.
Sure. Yeah, the wine grape growers use a formula that they call the heat unit formula, and that way they know how one season compares to another. And what it is they accumulate, or they tally, the number of degrees that they get in out there in their weather at their vineyard site that is over 50 degrees every year. They tally that, and there's a formula. I don't need to talk to the homeowner about it, but that way it allows them to understand how much warmer it is this year versus a previous year, or is this a similar year to another year? And so they accumulate those heat units every day. Let's say the temperature is 80. They've accumulated approximately about 15 to 30 heat units. So they'll accumulate those over time, and they'll say, this is going to be a similar year to 2015, which this year is very similar to 2015. If you remember, we had a lot of heat in that. And so I've been tracking these heat units, and that allows people, not only farmers with grapes, but any kind of crop, it allows people to understand, you know, okay, what kind of quality, or what am I going to be having to do to this crop? Well, this year, when they see these heat units coming, they know, for one thing, they can keep a little higher load on the plant. They don't have to thin the plant quite so much. They also know that, hey, with these heat units, we're going to have plenty of sugar in our grapes. So we don't need to let our plants hang. All those grapes, the farmer has to know when, the producer has to know when he's going to harvest. So by tallying these heat units, he can look out there and say, ah, my harvest this year, and I would expect it to be pretty early. I would expect it to be probably in the early part of September. So it's a really useful tool for a lot of people. For homeowners, it's in general, it's interesting to know if we're in one of our hot years, like we are. I mean, obviously, you know, by just being out in your yard every day. But this will be very similar to 2015. So what does that do in the with the wine and the wine quality? That was a nice year. Big wines, big bold wines, because you get those heat units, you can really build up the sugars, which also translates into alcohol. So the farmer knows he wants to harvest early enough so that the wines still have some complexity, so that they don't get too sugary and too high alcohol. So interesting things that they have to follow.
What veggies and fruit for people that are gardening right now like this heat best?
Well, there's no question that as long as you give them a little bit of shade and they're not in the really harsh afternoon sun, tomatoes love the heat. Peppers even more. Peppers, all kinds of peppers. I've never seen my peppers do so well as this year. They're just making huge, beautiful peppers. But any of the what we refer to as kind of summer things, like beans are great. They love the heat. We've got melons, of course. Melons and squash are just crazy growing this summer. So all of those types of crops are really great.
What about ones that don't like the heat?
Yeah, well, the ones that typically that you're not going to get very good results are those broccoli, Brussels sprouts, even kale and collards kind of struggle a little bit in this heat if you don't give them a little shade or a touch of a shady spot. Things like carrots and others, peas, yeah, not they don't like the heat too much either. But one thing you can do is as soon as we're in about the 10th or so, 10th, 15th August, you can go out and replant your cool season crops, and they're going to grow just beautifully in the last half of August, September, and early October. And so you can get a second crop of a lot of these cool season.
I know it's Fair Week. Talk about what the Oregon State University Extension Service has going on out at the fair.
Yeah, out at the fair, we've got the Master Gardeners have got their booth out there. They're also the Extension has a booth itself, and there'll be people there that can answer questions about what the Extension agents do. We've got foresters, and we've got a forestry agent, a livestock agent, myself, horticulture, and our 4-H agents. So the 4-H kids are really having fun out there. And the weather kind of got nice for them in the last half of the week here. So their livestock activities, that's great. Their club activity. So lots of things going on with Extension.
So where do they find you at the fair?
In the old expo, in the old what they call the old building, the older expo building. I always forget what they call the buildings out there, but it's the one that's
basically east of Douglas Hall, right?
Yes, that's right, and across from some of the livestock barns there and so on. So yeah, that's the area to go on out and find the Extension people and the Master Gardeners.
All right, Steve Rehnquist from the Oregon State University Extension Service. A lot of advice there, and we'll see how the rest of the summer goes.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, you're welcome.
12:57 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.